All right, everybody, we're back for our next installment of our Let's Dig Into It interview series with our BIPOC birders and nature enthusiasts. And today I have a new friend, Yamina. Hi, Yamina. Welcome.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you so much for stopping by today and chatting with me. She's the program coordinator of for the birds at Audubon New York. And tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I'm really fortunate in that I get to do bird conservation in New York City, and in urban spaces. So our program is really special because it's an environmental education program that's place-based. So we go to schools all over New York City and we teach the students about birds in their own community, which is really important to me. Yes. I also live in an urban space, so I recognize the importance of recognizing the value of these spaces. So we go to schools, we teach kids about bird conservation, about birds, so like migration and beaks and all that fun stuff. We'll take them on a bird walk in their own community, and then we'll take them on a field trip to like their local major park, so like Central Park or Prospect, Van Cortlandt. And then some schools choose to do a habitat project. So they'll either go to a park and pull invasives or plant natives, or they can have a little native plant garden on their property. We're starting to move away from that a little bit and starting to work with older students and starting to look into environmental justice, just because obviously that's really important.
Yeah.
And I have been going on and on about it at work. I'm that brown person in the office.
You be that brown person, girl. So
it's starting to work. It's starting to like sneak into their heads that in order to stay relevant, we have to change how we do things. Mm-hmm. And so we've taken COVID as this chance to shift the work that we do, which I'm just really excited about. And given like what you said about Audubon, the fact that I get to do this work within that organization, I think it makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's definitely necessary for sure. And I'm super glad that you're here today to chat a little bit more about your perspective on I don't like the term urban birding, but for lack of a better word, urban birding, but basically the idea that like you don't need to go out into these fancy spaces or like these really far away places to get into nature and also to get people into nature. Like it's sometimes so much easier for people to connect with what's right in front of them and what's right around them. So yeah. I look forward to hearing more about that perspective for sure. I don't think people lot of it. So
I'm sorry.
I don't think people like utilize or know about that perspective a lot, you know?
No, I was gonna say it's something I can go on and on about. And it's a journey I went on. So I live in New Jersey and in an urban area, and I would think that I had to drive an hour to be in nature, quote unquote in nature. And then I started this job and I realized that it's here and it's undervalued. And it's undervalued also in the sense that I think people use that as an excuse, like, okay, so we have this nature preservation, which means that it doesn't matter what we do in the city because there's that giant green space over there. And as long as we protect that, who cares that there aren't green spaces in the city? And that's not the case. Like we as people need green spaces, and also birds need green spaces wherever they are, including the city.
This weird selective protection, which defeats the purpose of conservation, you know, it needs to be everywhere. We're saying that you grew up in a more urban area. What do you remember at all, like your first bird that like you saw in those like building areas that kind of piqued your interest? Because I think that there's so many different kinds of birds that you can find that you don't have to go all the way somewhere else, you know, that are super interesting, you know?
So it's actually a little morbid. When I first started my job, And this is sort of jumping ahead, but that's why I started birding. Mm-hmm. When I first started my job, I was dropping off supplies with a coworker. We were going for a walk in the city, and then she was already a birder, and she was had her ID down, and she like looked down and was like, "Oh," and we found a dead bird, and it was a Perula that had been migrating through New York City, flew into a building, and died. But obviously, it was sad, but also there was like a neotropical like bird in New York City, and I didn't know that that was a thing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pigeons and starlings and house sparrows, and I love all of them, but you just sort of assume that's it. And I think that was my first glimpse into there's other stuff going on with birds, but also with bird conservation in New York City.
Yeah, especially with like in New York with all of the buildings and all of the lights and window strikes and the disturbance of migration when there's so many lights, you know. I bet that we do a lot of that work out here in Portland, and it's not even nearly the size of New York. So I bet there's a lot to be done and said there for sure. Would you mind telling me what your current favorite bird is? Again, it doesn't have to be like your all-time favorite bird. It of the moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's winter here on the East Coast, which means if anyone looks at the Rosemary Moscow comics, it is weird duck time, which is a great time of year. And so I'm currently on a mission to find geese that aren't Canada geese. Much love to Canada geese, but I just want a little variety. But I think right now I'm all about the ruddy ducks.
Because
they're tiny and their little tail sticks up and they're so cute.
They're so freaking cute. I love them. And they have that blue bill and that like they're so cute. And I saw a pair last week, I think, at a place that I went to around here. And you know what's so fun is that like so you are my first guest was all the way in the UK, but you are the first guest of mine to be on the East Coast. So it's so different. The birds are so different. And I was like, what is she going to say? Am I going to know it? Do I have to Google it? I don't know. You know, but I'm glad it's ruddy duck. That's super fun.
Yeah, that's right. Like you don't have cardinals, right?
No. And I'm so annoyed because I grew up in Ohio where we had cardinals, but you know, I didn't appreciate that or pay attention to birds when I was younger. And so now that I'm out here and can't see them, I'm very sad, but it's okay. I'll live. You started to kind of get into how you discovered the world of birds and birding. I don't think that that story is that morbid. I love it actually, because, you know, I think people get stuck in the alive, romanticized version of nature, which is like, ooh, pretty plumage and migration and breeding. But, you know, stuff dies. So, like, a lot. And by a lot of the times, people and man-made stuff. And so what a way to kind of jump into the idea of birds is to be like, oh wait, there's other things out there, and also wow, this bird hit a building. That's you know.
Well, so the lighter note on the lighter side would be that as I told you, we take our students out for bird walks, and I was like, if I'm gonna lead a bird walk, I should probably know a thing or two. I don't believe in having to be an expert, but it helps to know some stuff.
Yeah.
And so I started going to walks with my local Audubon chapter on the weekends, and I enjoyed it. And I sort of was like, well, how many birds can I identify? And you just sort of get like really competitive with yourself and you just want to get better. Mm-hmm. And then I just realized that like, it's just so much fun. It's calming and soothing and peaceful, and it's so satisfying when you see something and you like can't identify it, and you bust out your guide and you like flip through it, and then you like have this conversation with other birders like, I think it was that. I always think that's fun. It's kind of like a puzzle. I also think it's important because it gets me out of the house year round. So in the past, I've struggled with seasonal affective disorder, and obviously going out and birding in the middle of winter totally helps with that and totally helps with my mental well-being. So I just feel like it's one of those things that's just like all around made my life better and more fun. So why wouldn't I keep doing it?
Exactly. That's the very similar sentiment that I've had. Like the Pacific Northwest is like dark for most of the year, dark and wet, So the seasonal affective disorder is like pretty big out here, and Happy Lights get sold off the shelves, you know what I mean? And so it's definitely really nice to get out and like not be so upset with that side of things, and just embrace it and be like, it's cold, it's wet, and it's dark, but there's still stuff happening, there's still stuff cool, like cool stuff happening around you. What would you say is your best birding story?
So, I was with the same coworker from the Perula story, and we went birding in Greenpoint. Nope, sorry, at Greenwood Cemetery
Sweet.
after a after we delivered a program. And for people who don't know, Greenwood Cemetery is actually this really famous, beautiful cemetery in Brooklyn, and it's massive and it has really great birding. It's one of those famous birding cemeteries. It's also cool because you have all these like great mausoleums, like the person who created like Tiffany's Glass, their mausoleum is there. So it's a very cool place. And we did some great birding, and finally we like found one of the like six ponds that are there. And we're looking at these ducks, and she's a better, at that point, she is more experienced in birding, and I'm just kind of like learning from her. And we look at this duck, and she's like, I don't understand why this duck looks like that. It kind of looks like a mallard, but its bill is pink. And there aren't really many ducks with pink bills, not like here in the US. And we're like looking at our guides and our phones, and we're looking at the birds, and we keep staring. And then just finally, she's like, those birds haven't moved. And I was like, yeah, you're right, they haven't. And so we try to get a closer look, and they're inflatable ducks in the middle of this pond that we've been staring at for like 15 minutes,
Trying to ID.
trying to identify. And they look really realistic. And then it was a male and a female, and the female is really accurate. It was just the male that was weird. But finally we were like, yeah, they haven't moved at
Oh my
all.
gosh. I love
So yeah.
that. I've gotten stuck with that same sentiment because we where I love to bird at like this place called Richfield Wildlife Refuge, and they and also another place, Savvy Island, and there's hunting there. And my again, same. I was still learning and didn't know any better. And I was like, oh, there's so many ducks way out there. And I'm like trying so hard to figure out like what they are. And I like I'm looking and I'm like, that's really they like seem really off. Like what's happening, And they're just like these decoy ducks that they put up to bring in other ducks for hunting. And I'm just like, God, why? Why? Just let me like live my life and not be stumped when I'm already trying to learn all these freaking, especially waterfowl, That's so wait, were they so what did someone just like put them there as like a joke or what was it for,
So we assume it was to, for that same reason, to attract more mallards, but like, why would you need to attract more mallards? They're like the most common duck that we have. So that was the only thing we could think of, because they were, like I said, they looked fairly accurate. They were right out in the middle of the pond. Why else would you put them there?
I can't imagine that you would be able to, but do they hunt at the cemetery?
No.
I was like, yeah, I can't imagine that being a thing.
No.
That'd be weird. Maybe I'm thinking from like a wildlife rehabilitation perspective. Maybe it's so that they're drawn there to nest because there's water there and like space instead of nesting in really inappropriate places like the middle of a sidewalk or someone's pool,
Interesting. That's
Maybe.
awesome. Yeah, it's a great It's a great theory. I like
I don't
that.
know. Interesting. We'll go with it. That's what it is. Nailed
Well,
it.
because yeah, I have heard about birds nesting on like green roofs, which is cool, but then
Yeah.
like what are their babies doing?
Exactly. They're not making it and they're ending up in wildlife rehab places. And the baby mallards are number one in during baby bird season. It's wild because of this very reason. Like there's so many mallards and then they just like are like crossing the street and to get to no water and then they all fall down a sewer, you know? So anyway, maybe that's what it is. Who knows? But that's I love that. Just getting stumped by statue birds. I'm here for it. Birding is always one of those super positive things for many different reasons, but I'm always interested in what people don't like about birding.
Yeah. Number one has to be birders.
Oh, yeah, just other birders. Love it.
No, there's a lot of gatekeeping in birding, and there's some very negative mentalities of just constantly striving to get quote unquote good birds or adding birds to your life list. And it's an easy trap to fall into. It's one I keep almost falling into, and then I have to take a step back and go to like my local park and watch like the white-throated sparrows and the cardinals for a while and just remember that that's not about adding a number to my life list. It's about being outside and enjoying it and looking at these beautiful creatures. And then there's also this idea of like a true birder. Like I've seen checklists like if you own like a shelf full of guides, you're a bird watcher, and if you own
Really?
a spotting scope, you're a bird watcher. And it's like it's these arbitrary rules that just exclude people who don't have the resources to make these big ticket purchases. And when really like one of my favorite quotes is it's like a good birder likes birds and a great birder loves them, and that's really all there is to it. So this is all of this really, I like remind myself of it because I don't want to be one of those people who's just like chasing rarities or just not that there's, I'm not judging anyone, but I don't just want to do that. I want to make sure that like I'm out there and like legitimately enjoying it and it's enriching my life.
Perfect. That I love the last words that it's enriching your life and like adding to it instead of necessarily like controlling it.
Right.
And I see a lot of that out here, you know, Pacific Northwest. There's so such a huge bird because there's nothing but like beautiful open green spaces that people can
Right.
go to, you know what I mean? And so I when I first started, I saw a lot of that. It was just so, it felt so competitive. And I was just like,
Yeah.
I don't, is this a contact sport? Like, what are we doing? You know? So I thought I was just gonna like enjoy like watching birds do their thing in nature.
Right.
And yeah, it's not to knock people who enjoy birding in that way, because it's definitely a way. There's many ways to do things, you know, many approaches. And so do you, boo. And at the same time, be aware of what that kind of puts out there to those people who are just getting into it, who don't have money for your Swarovski binoculars or Swarovski scope, you know what I mean? And that, like, if you do have those things, you're actively aware of the idea that this does make you a better
Or
birder, you
even
know,
like binoculars. I'm
in
always like,
general.
I have binoculars and I love them, but you can bird by ear. You can bird by silhouette. You can just like be like, that's a duck, and that's the end of it. You don't have to know every species of bird. I like to, but that's just the way I like to do it. I wouldn't judge anyone else for not birding that way.
Right. And like my two of my friends that I go with all the time are super into raptors. And I'm like, yeah, raptors are one of the best starter birds in terms of like learning how to ID and everything. And they always get so frustrated with their binoculars because they're not Swarovski or I have Vortex, you know what I mean? Like they're not those. And they're like, I can't really see the details that you're saying. And I'm like, That's okay. Let me show you, because we all have access to our phones. You know what I mean?
Right.
Some of us, not all of us, but you mean, and then, or field guidebooks or something like
Yeah.
that. And if you, even if you don't have access to those things, like that doesn't matter.
Well,
You
and then you
know?
can hone other skills. If your
Exactly.
binoculars don't pick up on every detail of the
Yeah.
bird, is it flapping its wings? How often does it flap them? What shape is it in? Like, there are definitely other details you can use to identify birds that make it challenging, but don't require you to drop however much money on a pair of binoculars.
Right. I agree. It's a and it like back to the lifeless thing, like I also try hard to not stumble into that part of it. I'm not really a big rarities chaser. I don't know that I always care, because half of the time I don't know what the bird is. I'm like, oh, there's a snow bunting. Great. I don't know. Like, you know, cool. I don't know. I'm down to go, because I'm gonna enjoy it no matter what. But like, I'm
Right.
not necessarily like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But that's just me. But when it comes to like the lifeless, I've tried so hard and have successfully stayed off eBird. I'm
Oh,
not
wow.
like compiling. Yeah, I like refuse to download it. I don't want to, because then it gets me into that mode of like
Yeah.
putting my list up there and like telling, you know, trying to figure out where things are and telling people where things are, and that whole like more involved aspect of it. And I don't really want to do that. I use Merlin just so I can ID things. But like that's really about it. And so my bird lists are a series of like notes on my phone, you know, and
Thanks.
that's it.
On the other end of the spectrum, I'm doing the like bird list a day challenge on eBird,
Yeah.
but I do it because it gets me to notice the birds by me. So there's like a group of pigeons that hang out by my window, and I remember to look at them and think about how cute they are because they're so cute. But then I put that on eBird. And so, because I have done the thing like, I want to add a bird, I want to add a bird. And now it's more like, okay, I'm adding data to this, the important resource. And I'm also taking a moment every day to look out the window and see what I see right here in my home. So I'm trying to turn it into something positive and not just like me. Race, and then you join like all these Facebook groups, and there's all these different, and then you just like hear about people who are like chasing these birds, and this is there, and this is that. And I'm trying to not get sucked into that. I'm trying to just like, when I want to go bird, I go bird and I see what I see.
See what you see. And I am only a part, I'm a part of two birding Facebook groups. Three. One of them I don't really interact with that much. One is World Girl Birders. The other one is Oregon Birding. Look, the comment section, just, oh my God. When people post, like innocent people who have no idea what they're doing, and they're like, I saw this cool bird I've never seen before, and it's a European starling. God fucking forbid that they
Right.
post a picture of it, because they just like people attack these new birders and are like, kill it, get it out of here. The amount of people that want these like innocent people to like murder these starlings that they see
Oh my
is
God.
in it's really intense for me personally, and I don't understand that amount of hate that you could have for an animal.
Right.
It was a little weird to me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that world of those groups, especially on Facebook, is something that I'm paying more attention to it, not because I want to be a part of it, but because I want to take note of like what's happening. And like, it's wild. And so I'm paying attention in terms of this, like, kind of what we're talking about in terms of like this like idea of the competitiveness of birding and how that manifests, right? And it manifests in this way where people are filled with so much hate over a picture of a bird. You know what I mean? It's really interesting to me the way people consume birds. You know what I mean? It's like another way of consumerism
Right.
in general, you know, and they just consume,
Yeah.
you know.
Yes. There was a recent article on the Audubon website written by a field scientist who has indigenous roots, and they were talking about that exactly, that idea of birding has turned into this colonization
Say it,
almost,
girl, because
like
that's
I have to
exactly what it
collect
is.
all of the birds. That bird is mine. It goes on my list. Instead of just being like, nature is cool. Like, nature is cool. I feel bad for the duck, but that bald eagle had to eat. And that's how ecosystems work. And that's the food chain. I don't necessarily want to stare at a dead duck, but I wouldn't be mad at someone for taking a picture of it. But it's that the thing you were saying about, like, when I look at birds, I want it to be like a perfect shot of the bird being super cute and looking really good, and there's no blood in it. And God forbid I have to think about like how scary nature can be. Very specific way of consuming birds. And then, so another example I think of is there's a bird walk leader in Central Park who's very famous for charging lots of money to lead bird walks in the park, and he uses calls to attract the birds. And not only is that unethical for the bird, but it also teaches people that when you go on a bird walk, you need to ex you can demand these things of nature, and nature will give them to you. And that's not how it works. When I go on a walk and I'm with students, I say, are we gonna necessarily see anything? And no.
No,
And
yeah.
that's totally fine because we're still having a great time. And there are other things we can enjoy. Nature isn't like an amusement park.
No, and it's certainly not ever going to be controlled. We can
Right.
manipulate it, but we will never be able to control Mama Nature at all because she's not having that shit. So we sure have tried. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I'm interested in reading that article. Do you mind sending that to me later?
Yeah, I will find it and I will send it to you because
Thank
it's
you.
really good.
Because I have these ideas swarming in my head about how we consume birds, like I said. And one of them is that, and that it is the reasons why Black, Brown, and Indigenous people of color have such a hard time in birding specifically is because it is colonialism. It just straight up is. And it's also white supremacy and how the idea that one bird is better than another is white supremacy. You know what I mean? Based on
Yeah.
what? Based on
Yeah.
what? Who says that it's that way? Other white
Yeah.
people, essentially. I think about the starlings. I mentioned this in,
Yeah.
other podcasts as well, or other episodes. And I really want people to understand how they are promoting and reiterating white supremacy, even down to the act of birding. If you're
Right.
doing it in these certain ways that are, I'm trying to use bird calls, which is unethical, and like, anyway, in order to manipulate an experience for these people who just paid me a bunch of money, for okay, cool, and why? Like, why? I don't know. I could go on and on and on about that. I need to read that article so that I can know more because I think that that's the key. That's the one thing that I'm just like, that's where I want the conversation to go. Well, I love birds and we could talk about, black cap chickadees all day, but I would rather talk about white supremacy and birding, to be
Right.
quite honest, because it's messing us all up. All of
Yeah.
us, including the birds, right? As usual, we digress. But for how long have you been birding?
Like 2.5 years.
Oh, yay! A baby birder like me. I am wondering since so I love to kind of give new birders some advice, especially from people who are also new to birding. Like there's so many people out there who have been birding for like 10 or 15 years, and they are full wealth of knowledge and experience. But I think it's super fun for like newer birders to tell newer birders like what's up. So any advice for our baby birders out there?
Yeah, if you are interested in being able to identify birds by sight or sound, and you don't have to be, we just talked about how there's no right way to bird, but if you are, the best way to do it is to just go out and bird. I know that I learned better from experience and being with, unfortunately, sometimes you have to be with birders who are more experienced, which isn't always the most fun thing, but you do learn a lot. And so I would go on my local chapter bird walks, and I would just sort of hang around in the back. And then if I had a question, I'd go ask it, and I was always listening, but I was trying to not engage with other people as much. But I can't deny that I didn't learn a lot. I did learn a lot. And then after I would go on the walk, I would go get lunch somewhere by myself, and I would just stare at my bird guide and read about the bird and learn about the bird. I don't know, like it helps you appreciate birds more. You learn more about them, you notice more about them, you know their personality. And like, believe it or not, all of these things help you find and identify birds. If you know what sort of places they prefer, what food they prefer, how they move, do they like to be together? Do they like to be alone? Like those peanut butter jelly birds people talk about. Just go out. It's fun. You'll be outside and you'll learn more about birds. Like there's no negative there. Obviously, be safe. So especially this podcast, right? It's for BIPOC. I would say go out with other people, even if they aren't birders. Just say, hey, let's go for a walk. And then you sneak in with a little bit of birding. I a few months ago, I ran into a younger black birder, and I would always say, oh, you know what? This place is really great. Don't go by yourself. Or, oh, this place is really great, and you can go by yourself. So also keep that in mind that unfortunately, you can't always go out by yourself, and you have to be safe, and you have to prep. And I know people are working on like all these great resources, like a green book for like birding and for like hiking. But until that happens, I would say chat with other people who know.
Isn't that wild that we have to give our young BIPOC birders that advice to
Yeah.
like prepare for your birding, your solace in nature birding trip?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that breaks my heart. But it is that it is still like that, obviously, and it's important advice. And I actually thank you for bringing that up because amongst all of these tips to be, become, quote unquote, a better bird or whatever that means for people personally, and like how to ID both by ear or by sight, by whatever. White people don't got to worry about the other one. You know what I mean? And so, and I'm glad that you like ran into a younger black birder. Like, hey, that's great. I don't get that out here. There's so many white people out here, but I think that's great too. And like, I think the birding by ear portion of that advice is it's that repetition, right? It's that going out there especially like also putting yourself in some of the same spots so that you can kind of see who is there, when they're not there, who's coming in, who's left. That's one of the things that I have recently discovered has been super beneficial for me is, but yeah, and then like I think the challenging thing for me, I don't, or do you find that you're pretty good at birding by ear? I struggle, girl.
No, I definitely
Ooh,
struggle with it.
that's hard.
And I get tired after a while. So like when I first start birding and I'm birding by ear, I'm like, yeah, I caught that and I caught that. And then just as time passes, I'm like, I can't. I don't have like the brain power to listen so closely. It does help, like you said, going to the same place all the time. So when the unfortunately when the pandemic first started and I was working from home, that was in March, spring migration hadn't fully kicked into gear. So I would go to my local park and I would listen to the birds, to the cardinals, to the sparrows. And then as migration started, you start to hear new sounds. And then you're like, okay, so that's not a sound I recognize. And then you have to find what bird is making the sound. And but I have to say, I think I saw like a bunch of chestnut-sided warblers this past migration. And every time I'd be like, what bird is that? What do I hear? Like every time, what warbler is that? Because they all sound the same. So it's something I struggle with.
It's definitely hard. I think birding in general is hard. There's so much so there's so much, period. There's so many birds and so much to consider. And sometimes they all look the same. I'm not a sparrow fan. The little brown birds, the LBBs, you know what? You're an LBB. That's what you are. As I take my guys out and I'm like, I don't know what that bird is. It's the LBB, you know. Like maybe the next time we see it, I will look it up for you. And again, they're in the raptors, so they don't care anyway. So, you know. cool. Well, thank you for that advice. This is my favorite part of the interview. Let's dig into it. What would you love to get into today? Be anything.
So I'm gonna continue with the EE stuff because it's something that I feel very passionate about. So urban environmental education has always been there's this nature center and they're coming to visit our school and they have pelts and they have nests and they have all these cool biofacts and you're gonna look at it and learn about it and then they're gonna go and you're never gonna engage with nature again. Which is wrong on so many levels, especially since it's usually like white college students who are doing like AmeriCorps or whatever who come and engage with all the little brown kids and then leave. And I just, or you get a bus full of brown kids and you ship them out to a center and then show them around and then they go back home. And again, it's okay. I went to nature, it was over there. And then I come home and then I don't think about nature again. And I think that model is so outdated and so problematic.
It's just also
It's
ineffective.
ineffective because you think of nature as something that's not part of your community. So why would you care about it? Like, why would you care about preserving spaces that you don't visit and that you don't benefit from? When you have so many other things going on in your own life to worry about. So I've had some negative experiences with, I went to like this really ridiculous training and I didn't think it was on Urban EE because that's not how they sold it. And then it was on Urban EE and I pointed it out and the person leading it was like, well, it's on environmental education in urban spaces because that's really hard to do. And I was like, I need to go.
Who paid for that? Hopefully not you. Did you?
I got a partial refund back because I complained. But I hit that mentality of, oh, we have to teach environmental education in the city. It's such a like struggle, which no, it's not. No,
No,
it's
it's
not.
not.
It's so much fun. Like it's so cool to like show kids their home and have them look at it in a completely different way. And again, I say this as someone who went through that journey after I started my job. So when I would walk my dogs, I would just walk them and that was it. And then I started my job and I would walk my dogs and I'd be like, oh, there's a red-tailed hawk like right by my house. I'm like, oh, there are thrushes and there are kinglets. And even like the pigeons, I'm like, oh, that one is a checkered pigeon and that one is a blue bar and there's all these collamorphs and that one is trying to court that one. There's all these like amazing things going on around us and it's not just birds, like squirrels are amazing and sometimes they have like really giant snacks and it's the cutest thing ever. And I never used to notice that because I wasn't paying attention. So clearly this is something I feel very passionately about, that we need to change how we look at and define nature or the outdoors. And we need to really value our urban green spaces and make sure that they're protected and that they're used, because they are a resource. We just don't use them enough.
You've hit on so many things that I want to like follow up on. One of them being this idea of what does it mean and what does it look like to be in nature and what does it mean to be outside? And so again, I'm from Cleveland ass Ohio. You know what I mean? Like I didn't grow up in the hood, but I grew up close enough. And I never went out. Like me being outside was me being in my yard and then me being, you know, in the house after that. You know what I mean? And so the first time that I went camping, I didn't know what I was doing at all. We brought a blow up mattress and didn't bring an air pump for it. You know, like I didn't know what I was doing. We didn't know how to set up the tent. And so there's nothing wrong with stepping out your front door, wherever that is, and considering you being outside, because that is nature. Mm-hmm. There's not this like a disconnect from the green spaces and the gray building spaces. You're still literally outside, and mm-hmm. nature has done an amazing job of adapting to those building spaces around everybody, right. You know? And that like what a privilege it actually is to be able to enjoy green spaces or the coast or the ocean, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or the desert or the mountains all the time. That's a privilege.
And we also, society tries to limit what it looks like to enjoy nature. So it's like you're hiking.
Right.
Or you're rock climbing, or you're mountain biking, and mm-hmm. all you're doing is creating this image that in order to truly enjoy nature, I have to buy all of these, like this apparel and this backpack and this equipment, and I have to do it a certain way. When if you have a cookout in the park, or if you play soccer mm-hmm. at like your local like community center / park, you're mm-hmm. outside and you're enjoying nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need anything to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's again, it's gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite sort of like experiments to do is Google a term. So when you Google outdoors and you do an image search for it, it's like green mountains and like able-bodied skinny white people outside with expensive backpacks and hiking boots on. And it's never just like an old couple sitting on a bench in the park, or like Dominican older men playing chess in the park. Like it's never anything Dominoes. Realistic like that. Mm-hmm. It's always one very specific thing,
mm-hmm.
Which only makes, again, everyone else feel like I can't do that because I don't fit into that mold.
It goes back again to the idea of how we consume things, like just consume, you know, like that we've successfully turned something like the natural world into something that we can consume.
Right.
And it has to be consumed in a specific way for mm-hmm. it to be consumed successfully.
Right.
It's wild to me. I don't know. I think there's a lot of really good and amazing people out there and groups and organizations that are working real, real hard to combat that. And you and one in your program and what you do and all your whole mentality about this is one of those people that I'm super glad that you're out there, especially in New York specifically. You know, the thing that I love the most is when these kids do get to experience some of the things that they've never experienced before and the joy that comes from that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so much more authentic. Not that any joy is inauthentic, but there's something much more deeper when I'm looking at these Black and brown kids being excited over this giraffe, you know what I mean? Or when I was working with the raptors, I had a owl on my arm and these kids were like freaking out, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I loved that so much. But you're right, which is where I'm going to follow up with what you were saying before. When you do that as one-off programming, once a week in a month, and you never have those kids back, you never follow up with them, you don't create a relationship, that excitement to see that owl or that giraffe diminishes so quickly because they are worried about some other shit that these little white kids don't got to worry about. And it's that is something that I think a lot of places struggle to understand, is that you can't have one-off programming. Like, if you're gonna like do DEI work and you're like, let's get into these places we've never been before, like, understand what that actually means. You know,
well, and then you're also like teaching these kids things that they're never gonna have to use again. So like,
right,
I worked at one of those camps where they would bust them in, and we learned awesome stuff like white-tailed deer ecology and black bird ecology. But that's awesome, and then you go back to Newark or Jersey City and then you never see a bear or a white-tailed deer. So what was the point of that? Like, at the very least, give them skills and knowledge that are relevant to their everyday lives, or that they can use, and that way they'll, even if it's a one-off, there's more of a chance that it'll stick with them and they'll care about conservation.
Right.
As opposed to that place we went in the woods that one time.
Right.
And then again.
Right. Which you can have a blast doing, you know what I mean? It's always, it's fun, you know what I mean? To do those things. But yeah, you're right. If you're going to do those one-off programs, like, make it, you know, put everything you can into it so that it's successful. And a lot of places don't do that. They do, they pack their like feathers, their pelts up, their skulls up, and it's the same shit they use for everything else, and it's dated. That kind of stuff is cool, but it's dated because that's all they do. I want to hear more what you have to say.
Thank you.
Of course.
So yeah, so one of our favorite lessons that we deliver is a lesson on pigeons.
I love it.
I love pigeons. And there's different color morphs of pigeons. And that's the only bird that has different color morphs that aren't based on sex.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And then they do their courtship behavior, obviously. And so that's one of the things that we do. We'll go on pigeon walks and like the kids are like, it's pigeons. And I'm like, yeah, but look, there's a brown pigeon. And there's a white pigeon. And there's a gray pigeon. And that one's got that marking on its wings and it's checkered bark. It's a checkered pigeon, and then there's a blue bar, and that means it has stripes on its wings. And then look, that one is cooing. Why do you think he's cooing at that other one? And it's birding, but these are birds that these kids are going to see every day when they're walking to and from school. So even if they don't become birders, they still have that idea that, oh, here in New York City, we have birds and birds are awesome. And who knows where that'll lead. I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, to piggyback off of that, because, you know, again, to go back to this idea of colonialism and white supremacy and birding. So the idea of doing a program for kids on pigeons is so amazing, and I love that, because people hate pigeons. They hate on pigeons so hard, and I'm like, pigeons are beautiful. And they're strong as shit, and I've, you know, working with them in wildlife rehabilitation, like, they're very cool. I like them a lot. But there's, again, that idea that one bird is cooler than the other, or there's a better bird, or there's, you know what I mean, like, oh, well, if you're in the city, look for peregrine falcons instead of like looking for pigeons, you know what I mean? But like, again, you can do that and be like, here's these pigeons. And also, this is a diet for peregrine falcon, who are also in the sky that you may not know are there too. And it's cool. But they're both equally cool because of this, this, and that. I am wondering if you have any like favorite memories from certain outings that you've taken specifically Black and Brown youth on. In your work, if there's something that's special that sticks out to you.
Yeah. One of my favorite memories from work is I was leading a neighborhood walk for some middle school students, and I look up and I was like, there's a gull. And the students are like, oh, cool. And then one of the students turns to me and she's like, how did you do that? And I was like, well, it's my job to do that. She was like, it is. And I was like, yes. I was like, I get paid to lead you on walks. Like, I need to be able to see birds. That's my job. And she looked so amazed that, like, this is what I do for a living. I, like, go to schools and I teach kids about birds, and I can spot birds. Even if it's something like a gull, the fact that she found that fascinating just made me so happy. And I always hope that, like, that sticks with the kids, that there's like a whole world of jobs out there and fields that you can go into that are fun and exciting. And maybe you wouldn't think of it as a job, but it totally is a job. And so I recognize that I'm a woman of color. I do EE, I'm a birder, and I recognize the significance of students being able to see someone who looks like them come into the classroom to teach them these things. So one time I was working an after school program, and it was one of those days where it was right before a holiday and like only a few kids come in, which is fun because you get to like sit and talk with the kids and like get to know them. And I think my coworker or I said something in Spanish, and her eyes got really big, and she was like, you speak Spanish? And then we just like started talking in Spanish, and she was just so excited that again, like, this outsider came in to work with them and that we spoke Spanish and that we could connect on another level. I think that saying that representation matters, I don't think people understand how important it is, especially for young people, to see people who look like them doing things that they didn't realize were an option, because that's how they learn that that's an option for them. So I'm so happy and grateful that I get to work with these New York City kids and talk about these things. I'm currently hosting some high schoolers to do some like youth civic action. And the whole point of this program is they think of an issue in New York City that they want to address, obviously, because we are a bird conservation organization. It has to be something that's related. I had them do research on different articles to think of a topic, and they came up with fast fashion. And I was like, I would never in a million years think of fast fashion. And they're like, well, the microplastics, they get in the water and that's bad. Like, and it comes from really far away. So the CO2 emissions, I was like, okay. And then they're like, also the way they're made isn't fair. I'm like, all right. And then one student was like, we have to make sure that we address racial justice. And I was like, first of all, I love you. And I was like, okay, so like, what's an issue that like that addresses fast fashion and that consumption and addresses meeting the needs of everyone? Like, what about thrift stores? Are there thrift stores everywhere? There aren't thrift stores everywhere. So like, we're thinking about all of these different things. And again, these are things that I never would have come up with, but these young people like thought of it and are looking at bird conservation in a way that most of us weren't.
I don't think that our generation has this idea of young kids, but like our parents and their parents' generations really think that kids are not smart and like aren't like with it. Like these kids are so smart and so they are absorbing everything. And to think that they aren't capable of understanding what's happening around them and then coming up with solutions at a young age, like the fast fashion thing. And I never thought about that. You know what I mean? Because I'm steeped in growing up, not having to, just like my parents and their parents, you know what I mean? But these kids are like coming into a timeline in especially American history where these things are being talked about. And so they know what's up. And so it really is giving them the chance to come up with that stuff and then like do something about it. And so that social justice, that racial justice aspect of the work that you're doing is so, so, so important too. It's super important. I want to ask you who or what animal or organization or other human being that you love or is doing some amazing work you want to shout out, give them a little spotlight.
Yeah, so this is a little self-serving, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Do it.
I recently became a committee member for the Black and Latinx Birders Scholarship, which is so exciting.
Yay!
It's obviously a scholarship for undergraduate students who are Black or Latinx who are doing environmental studies and are birders. There is no age cap, so it doesn't matter when you decided to go to college. Amazing. And it doesn't have to be a 4-year institute. It can be a 2-year institute, which all of these things I love because it just opens it up. But it's a scholarship for anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000. And I believe we're accepting applications now, but I just think like, I'm so lucky that I get to be involved with this thing. And the co-chairs are Orietta and Taiki, mm-hmm. and they're working to expand this. And I'm just so excited to see like all the amazing things that they do. And selfishly, I'm so excited to like see the applications and again, like learn about what young people are doing and mm-hmm. sort of motivate myself that way to, like you said, just like continue giving mm-hmm. them as much as possible. But yeah, that's who I want to shout out because just such amazing work. And I'm so happy.
I love it. They got shouted out at the last one too. I'll continue. We could shout them out every single episode because I'm here for it. I love what they're doing. Thank you so much for being here and reaching out and telling us your stories. I appreciate it. I know that sometimes it can be laborious in terms of going into the struggles that we have or that we see in these kids or these other people and ourselves. So I thank you for your time for doing that. 100%.
Thank you for letting me come here and get on my soapbox. And it's sometimes it is hard, but it definitely helps to be talking to someone else who is a woman of color and who cares about the same things mm-hmm. I care about and who knows like how difficult it is. So even though yes. I'm talking about things that are a little bit tough, the fact that the audience cares and that you care definitely helps.
Basically what it is it's seeing, it's a reflection of yourself and others. And yeah. that is one of the best and most fulfilling ways to connect mm-hmm. And to create community is that feeling that somebody else is reflected in you. And when you don't have that, it's really hard to want to talk about it. So yeah, I appreciate you so much and all of the work that you're doing. Well, thank you so much again for being here. You have a wonderful day. You know, remember that we can always be burdened.